And it's not just ballistic missiles, ladies and gentlemen. I can make the same case, the same sad tale for chemical weapons, biological weapons, and nuclear weapons. The bottom line is by 1995, the CIA knew for absolute certainty that Iraq had been fundamentally disarmed. But see, it wasn't about disarmament. The CIA wasn't there to disarm Iraq. No, the same month that I briefed the intelligence community in October 1992 that the weapons were accounted for, the President of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, signed a lethal finding, a covert document authorizing the CIA to use whatever means necessary, up to and including lethal force, to remove Saddam Hussein from power. That's what it was all about. Now, George Herbert Walker Bush, a month later, had to run for re-election. He didn't make it. He got beat. Enter Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton's the guy that says, you know, I'm not too comfortable with this American policy on Iraq. I'm a Southern Baptist, he said, and I believe in deathbed conversions, and I think we can get Saddam Hussein to change his ways. And he actually sent teams to Jordan to meet with Iraqi diplomats. I write about this in the book, where I'm sitting with Iraqi officials in January of 1993, and they're ecstatic. I said, what are you so happy about? And they said, you got a new president coming in, and we think sanctions are going to be lifted soon. He's talking to us about the conditions under which sanctions can be lifted. Amazing. Except all those politicians, Republican and Democrat, who had told their constituents that we were confronting evil in the form of Saddam Hussein, a Hitler-like figure, come running up to Clinton and say, you can't make a deal with Hitler. You can't negotiate with the devil. So Clinton, instead of solving the Iraq problem, inherited the Iraq problem, a problem of regime change and the problem of economic sanctions-based containment. But he wasn't enthusiastic about it, so he kept it on the back burner until 1994, when the Republican Party wins the election at Congress. The Gingrich Revolution comes sweeping in. And one of the first things they do is highlight Bill Clinton's inability or unwillingness to deal with Saddam Hussein. And they use that as an example of how weak this president is. Remember I told you, Saddam Hussein doesn't pose a security risk to the United States. He's a political threat to the president. First George Herbert Walker Bush, now Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton's in trouble because he's got his own re-election campaign in 1996 that he has to run. So in 1995, he turns to the CIA and says, you need to get rid of Saddam Hussein by June 1996. It's got to be done so I can run a campaign free of interference. So the CIA gets to work. But how do you get rid of Saddam Hussein? He's surrounded by concentric circles of security that have proven very difficult to penetrate. How do you gain access to Iraq? Oh yeah, those weapons inspectors. They got a mandate that allows them to go anywhere, anytime. So the CIA used the inspection process as a Trojan horse to gain access to Iraq for the purpose of spying on Saddam, not to facilitate disarmament. That was my job. Spying on Saddam to gain information so that they can remove him from power. Carry out a coup d'etat. They tried to carry out a coup d'etat in June 1996. Remember that name, Iyad Alawi? Everybody should know it. Yeah. Guy was an interim prime minister of Iraq. But before he entered into a career in politics, he was a paid agent of the CIA. See, they had Iyad Alawi and the Iraqi National Accord set up in Amman, Jordan, and sent them into Iraq to recruit spies using intelligence information gained by the UN inspection process. In June 1996, Iyad Alawi had this big scheme to get rid of Saddam, but the Iraqi intelligence service penetrated the scheme, arrested all the plot makers, and rolled it up. In doing so, exposing the complicity between the CIA and the United Nations inspection process. It's not that the inspectors knew what was going on, but they were being used. And from that moment on, the Iraqis, whenever they looked at an inspector, didn't see somebody trying to disarm them. They saw somebody trying to kill their president, and sadly, they were right. When you look at the CIA's report that was put out after 2003, the CIA clearly says that all weapons of mass destruction were destroyed by Iraq by the summer of 1991. Now, a lot of people, including your prime minister, like to say Iraq was in violation of 17 consecutive Security Council resolutions. Even if there wasn't any WMD, Saddam Hussein had no intention whatsoever of complying with the rule of law. But wait a minute, he got rid of his WMD in the summer of 1991. In March 1992, he told the UN inspectors that he had lied, and he said, we don't have any weapons left. And he was doing everything necessary to work with the inspectors to facilitate this understanding. They said, well, wait a minute, then why did he block your inspections, especially you, Ritter? You were the moron running around in Iraq from 96 to 98, getting in the face of everybody saying, I want to go here, I want to go there. And when they didn't, you went whining back to the Security Council saying, they won't let me in, they won't let me in. True. I did. My job was to inspect, and we were being denied access. And believe me, as somebody on Iraq, on the ground in Iraq trying to gain access, when the Iraqis deny you access, you begin to think, why? Perhaps they're hiding weapons of mass destruction. Perhaps they're hiding something. They were hiding something. They were hiding information that pertained to the security of their president. This is why the Iraqis obstructed the work of the inspectors. They did not obstruct any legitimate effort to disarm them. Anytime we went to a factory, anytime we went to a facility that could be used for WMD, they gave us 100% cooperation. They only balked when we went to presidential palaces, we went to the intelligence services, we went to the security services. They eventually let us in, but they weren't too happy about it. No, the Iraqis were cooperating. They were not violating any resolutions. America was violating the resolutions because we never intended to respect the resolutions. Now, Clinton in 96 had a problem. He couldn't get rid of Saddam Hussein, so once again he put Saddam Hussein on the back burner and tried to forget about him. But the Republicans wouldn't let him forget about it. The Republicans used his inability or unwillingness to deal with Saddam Hussein as fodder on the domestic political front. The Republicans were successful in 1998 in passing what's called the Iraq Liberation Act, where $100 million of American taxpayers' money was set aside to support opposition groups to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Clinton had no choice but to sign this legislation, but he wasn't thrilled about it, so he didn't effectively spend this money, which leads us to the 2000 election, in which George W. Bush uses Bill Clinton's unwillingness or inability to deal with Saddam Hussein as a cornerstone of his foreign policy platform. He said, if you vote for me, I will get rid of Saddam Hussein. I will succeed where Clinton has failed. Now, W. wanted to use the opposition groups. He got elected, they started working with the opposition groups, and he had a problem. The CIA was saying, these guys aren't serious, these guys aren't good, it's a waste of money, a waste of time. So W. was frustrated, he couldn't make a move on Iraq. Then comes September 11th, that horrible day, where 19 men hijacked four airplanes and flew them into targets, killing around 3,000 Americans. And the fear and the ignorance of the American people was exploited and manipulated by the Bush administration to make a move on Iraq that had nothing to do with the events of September 11th. The president said that Saddam Hussein had a relationship with Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. That relationship was a very dangerous one, not so much because they were cooperating, but that Saddam could pass weapons of mass destruction to Osama bin Laden, who would attack America by proxy, and we know Osama bin Laden wants to attack America because he just did. 3,000 Americans are dead. But next time he attacks us, he'll use Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, which will make the events of 9/11 pale in comparison. Note, we had to go to war against Iraq. The personification of evil, Saddam Hussein, the Middle East equivalent of Adolf Hitler, who possesses massive quantities of weapons of mass destruction. And so we did. And we got rid of Saddam, and we find ourselves in the situation we face today. Ladies and gentlemen, we can't accept a situation where the politicians say, oops, we got it wrong. They didn't get it wrong. The president knew that there were no WMD in Iraq. Not just George W. Bush, Bill Clinton knew. George Herbert Walker Bush knew. It was never about disarming Iraq. It was only about getting rid of Saddam Hussein. Congress knew that there were no WMDs in Iraq. And I can say this about Australia. I know your intelligence service. I worked with them. I worked with them on the ground in Iraq. I worked with them as an analyst in Bahrain supporting the inspectors. And I guarantee you this, your intelligence service knew that Iraq had been fundamentally disarmed. Your intelligence service knew that there was no massive stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But your prime minister wouldn't listen to your intelligence service. No, your prime minister said that he knew there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but where did he get this certainty of knowledge? Not from Australian intelligence sources. He got it from American representatives who came over and briefed him on the same dreck that was being sold to the Congress of the United States and the American people. Australia went to war on the basis of an American lie. And I don't know about you, but if I were an Australian, I'd be shamed. I'd be deeply shamed. Fact is, maybe it's time you guys leave here tonight, and when you see an Australian flag, pull it down and raise the American flag and just certify your genuine status as a colony of the United States of America. Because if this is truly what's happening, that's all you are, and that's all you're good for. But it's not just about being a colony of the United States, it's about the failure of representative democracies to do the right thing. We say we're a nation of law, we say we believe in law, we say we're a people who respect human rights, and yet we sit back and do nothing while our respective governments lie to us, mislead us. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no such thing as representative democracy unless you behave as citizens of a representative democracy. This means you don't just elect people to higher office, but you hold them accountable for what they have done in your name. And both of our countries have failed on this account. We all know that we were lied to about WMD, and yet in 2004, we re-elected George W. Bush. You re-elected John Howard. The British re-elected Tony Blair. Why? Because as a society, we have collectively failed to stand up to the challenges of citizenship. Go back and look in the mirror. Now, I'm preaching to the choir here, but go ask your fellow citizens to look in the mirror and ask the following question. Am I a citizen or am I a consumer? You see, if you're a citizen, you care about these things. You stand up, you fight, you struggle, you defend the ideals and values that you represent. You're not willing to be lied to by your elected representatives. If you're a consumer, you've been wrapped in a cocoon of comfort, man. And as long as the powers that be keep you waddling down a relative path of prosperity, you don't want to rock the boat. So you give up your responsibilities and citizenship. You transfer them to other people. You don't want to think about these problems. You allow your media to dumb everything down. You accept 30-second sound bites. You accept 3-minute in-depth stories. You accept your government to intimidate you through the politics of fear based upon your ignorance. And you don't question it. You just want to be fed. You want your addiction to your lifestyle to be fed. And the danger of having this addiction to lifestyle being fed isn't just that you're telling your government, feed the addiction. Because Australia is like the United States. We have a lifestyle we cannot sustain based upon our own resources. We got to go out and get it from somewhere. So if we're addicted to this lifestyle, we're telling our politicians, do whatever's necessary to go out there and gain access to global resources to feed my addiction. But the other thing you're doing is you're destroying the very notion of democracy. You see, as a citizen, if you transfer your responsibilities of citizenship to others, let's call them special interests, you're no longer functioning as a citizen. What happens is the power of citizenship gets concentrated in the hands of a few. That's not called representative democracy. That's called an oligarchy. And the danger about oligarchy is that you're trending in the wrong direction. Because the next step after oligarchy is fascism. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the direction the United States is heading. And I'm fearful that's the direction the colony of the United States of America, known as Australia, is heading. What are we going to do to stop it? What are we going to do to stop it? The only way we're going to stop it is to empower ourselves with knowledge and information. And the only way we can empower ourselves with knowledge and information is to engage in debate, discussion, and dialogue that's inconvenient to the powers that be. But you know what? I don't know about Australia, but in America, the Constitution that I swore an oath upon to defend, it doesn't say all power to the President, all power to Congress. It begins with, we the people of the United States of America. The solution rests with us. The question is, are we up to the challenge? Will we pick up that gauntlet? And as I said at the beginning, if debate, discussion, and dialogue, freedom of speech is sedition, so be it. Let it begin here. Thank you very much. I'll take any questions anybody has.